Shalom and welcome to On the House, the podcast where industry experts and professionals discuss real estate in Israel. I'm your host, Debbie Goldfischer, real estate agent, founder and editor-in-chief of buyitinisrael.com. Join us as we explore market trends, legal and tax issues, purchasing tips, neighborhoods throughout Israel, and much more. All this is On the House, helping you make the right move. Welcome back to On the House, the Israel Real Estate Podcast. It's great to be back after a little summer break. Things in Israel are still very concerning and hard all around. This morning, we received the awful news about the six hostages who were found dead, including Hirsch Goldberg Polin, who I think for many of us was the symbol of the hostages, being the son of American parents who did such an incredible job so gracefully advocating for their child and for all the hostages and sharing their story with the world in a respectable and courageous manner. Our hearts are totally shattered and we grieve with all the families and share in their pain more than words can express. Somehow, the situation here in Israel and for Jews around the world gives us at Biden Israel a lot of strength and determination to keep doing what we're doing, to help our brothers and sisters from around the world find their way home. I always say making Aliyah is not easy. Packing up your entire life and transplanting yourselves thousands of miles away is not something we can take lightly. But for those of us who are not quite ready or able to do so, buying a home in Israel is a big step in the right direction. It's like a magnet that will pull you home. It's a way to get on the property ladder, and it means you'll have a place to come to when, please God, you are ready. Or if chas v'shalom, you have to. Today, we are back for a new season. And this time the focus is on taxation related to real estate. The last season was on the financial aspects of purchasing in Israel, and we included two bonus episodes that related to foreign taxes. But for this season, our fourth season, we are focused entirely on Israeli taxation, and we will dedicate every episode to a different aspect of the subject. For this episode, I'm excited to welcome Yair Givati, a seasoned legal expert who brings a unique blend of Israeli roots and international experience to the table. Born and raised in Israel, Yair has spent time in the UK and the US, where he was educated and gained a deep understanding of the Anglo mentality. As a native Israeli, he's adept at navigating the complexities of Israeli bureaucracy, but his international experience allows him to offer efficient services to English-speaking clients. Yair now leads Chaim Givati & Company, a boutique law firm established in 1970 by his late father, Chaim. The firm is renowned for its expertise in Israeli real estate law and its ability to guide clients from around the world through the intricacies of Israeli property laws and taxation. With the legacy of his late father, Yair continues to uphold the firm's impeccable reputation and commitment to excellence. So with that, Yair, welcome, and thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm happy to join you here on this episode. Taxes is really one of my favorite subjects. And just join your words of condolences to the families that found their kids, you know, this morning. It's a dreadful time, and we hope to come out of it very, very soon and have happier and better times here in Israel.
Amen. Thank you, Yair. So before we get started, Yair, I know you travel a lot. I often WhatsApp you in the middle of the night, and for you, it's like the morning or the afternoon, and you're always on the run, always on the go, doing amazing work. I know you recently got back from LA, is that right?
We were all over the US, actually. We were in LA, San Diego, Dallas, Houston, Chicago, New York, New Jersey.
Unbelievable.
We traveled all over, and it's great to see how many people are interested in the property market in Israel, in investing or taking their first step in it. We have had more people than we have ever had in any other trips. It's incredible to see how much Israel is a crazy country. You know, most countries think around the world, if you knew there's a war happening, people would stay away and, you know, prices would go down. It's funny to see how much the interest actually picked up and how many people are interested still in moving to Israel. It's showing such a resilience of the Jewish nation all around the world.
Incredible. Yeah, I always say that there's no logic when it comes to Israel. Everything defies the odds. And, you know, it's interesting because I think many of my listeners know I was away during July. I spent the month in the UK and in the New York, New Jersey area. And actually, I met a number of people who told me that they work with you. Actually stopped this guy in the street in London. I was walking back from the mall, from Brent Cross, and I saw this religious-looking guy. and just asked him, like, do you feel safe walking here in England? Just curious to know. And it turned out he just got back from Israel a day or two earlier. And we got talking about real estate in Israel, as I often do. And he told me he owned something in Yerushalayim and you were his lawyer. Really, really nice guy. So that was just one example. And in New York as well, a bunch of people told me that they know you, they're in touch with you. So you've obviously done a good job at getting yourself out there and getting a great reputation. So today, as I said, we're going to talk about the taxation applied when you make a real estate purchase in Israel. Last month in August, an amendment was made that has a huge impact, in particular on Olim, on new immigrants. And obviously, we're going to discuss that. But before we do, I think it's very interesting to raise an important point that in Israel, it's the attorney who deals with taxation as opposed to a tax advisor or an accountant in most other places in the world. And perhaps you can explain to us why this is the case.
Okay, so the main reason is that every transaction in when it comes to real estate has to be reported to the tax office. The responsibility of reporting the transaction to the tax office falls on the lawyer. And by doing so, we have to know, you know, how to advise, how to structure the deal. So it's very, very important for us to know all the small intricacies and details of a transaction to do tax planning. By doing tax planning the right way, you can save a lot of money for your clients. You know, we have had deals that we were able to save for our clients even 600,000 and 800,000 shekels. Wow. By structuring it the right way. I always tell my clients, when you at the beginning of the process, it's very important to consult with your attorney, because knowing when to buy it before you make Aliyah, after you make Aliyah, before becoming a resident or after becoming a resident, where are you buying, can have a significant impact on your taxation.
Mm-hmm. So as Yair said, consult with a lawyer at the very beginning of the process. Don't try and be too clever and wait till the end. Okay, so I have so many questions and I want to start off. I mean, the main tax when purchasing is mas rechisha, the purchase tax. So let's talk about that. What exactly is this tax and when is it paid?
Okay, so the purchase tax is a tax that you pay on every transaction. Now, I'm saying every, but there are sometimes ways or places that you can buy that you would not necessarily have to pay purchase tax. But overall, most transactions happening in Israel, you would have to pay purchase tax. Defining date of a transaction in Israel is the day you sign the purchase agreement. This is very important, especially to our U.S. listeners, because as far as U.S. clients, they know the transaction is the day of closing, when you make the last payment and take possession. In Israel, it's the opposite. It's the day you sign the purchase agreement. This is the defining date of the transaction.
Even if the property is not built.
Even if it's not built.
Even if you can't move in for another 2 years.
Even if they don't have a permit yet. You know, once you sign the agreement, this is the defining date. And then it's your attorney's responsibility to report the transaction to the tax office within 30 days, and the tax is due within 60 days. Now, there are ways of deferring it. So for example, if, especially when you buy from a builder, when the apartment is going to be ready in, you know, 2, 3, 4 years' time, you have a way of deferring the payment. And especially it's very important nowadays, because many of the builders at this time are offering purchases for which you pay 20% at the signing and then 80% at the end. So according to the law, Clause 51, if anybody's interested, you can defer paying the purchase tax until you paid 50% of the purchase price itself. So you can actually push off the payment until the end of the transaction. Now, it does cost you, because it's not the same amount. If you defer the payment, you'll have to pay interest and index on the amount that was due. Now, it's not a penalty. You know, if you're late in general paying for it, on top of the index and the interest, you would have to pay penalties. Here, by law, because you can defer it, so there are no penalties, it's just the cost of the money. So you just have to include the, or take into consideration that you'll have to pay interest and index on that amount that was due 60 days from the signing.
Mm-hmm. Which your money would be earning interest anyway.
So I tell my clients, really, you know, make a simple calculation. You know, if you're making more money on your money, then definitely defer it. If your interest you're getting on your money is not as much as you would have to pay for the interest and index you would pay on the money, then it's not worth it and pay it upfront.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's really good to know. We're going to talk about buying new construction later, but for now, let's focus on this tax when you're buying non-new construction. Before we do so, so you say that the lawyer takes care of it. So 30 days from the signing, you have to report the transaction. And then within 60 days, the client has to pay? And what is it, like a transfer, or how does he pay it?
The way you pay it, you get actually a voucher from the tax office, mm-hmm. which can be paid in many different ways. It can be paid over the internet. It can be paid, you know, from your account here in Israel. It can be paid if you have a change company you work with. You can't wire money from abroad to pay it, meaning you would have to somehow pay it from within the system in Israel. So it has to go through an Israeli account.
Or even on a foreign credit card.
So the credit cards depends on the amount. Usually on the lower amounts, you can use credit cards, but you know, with the prices of real estate in Israel and the purchase tax, which is especially for foreigners, at least at the beginning, if they haven't made Aliyah or haven't become an Israeli resident, would be 8% to begin with. So it's going to be quite
a lot of money.
That's why usually the system would not allow you to pay with a credit card, and you would have to go through an Israeli bank account, whether yours, some, you know, family members, or which is more limited, or a change.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about the calculations and what's involved in the chishuvim, in the calculation of the tax.
Right. So the basic tax for everybody, and not just for foreigners, even Israelis, the basic purchase tax, the rate starts from 8%, and about 6 million shekel, it goes up to 10%. Now, it's not on the full amount, so there are stages. So if you're buying, for example, an apartment that is 8 million shekels, so you pay 8% on the first 6 million shekels, again, numbers approximately, and 10% on anything above it. So 8% on the 6 million and 10% on the next 2 million shekels.
Got it. Okay. So that's for, let's say, a standard purchase, somebody who is Israeli?
Anybody. That's the standard rate for everybody.
Okay.
Now, there are two possible discounts. The first discount is an Israeli resident by their single residency. And I'm specifically saying single residency and not first, because many times it's used mm-hmm. first, but it's not just on the first. Because if you own an apartment, you sell it, and then you buy another one, you're still eligible for the lower tax rate as an Israeli resident.
Mm-hmm.
The rates start, it's on a scale again. It starts from 0%, 3.5%, goes up to 5%, and on the higher end, still reaches the 8 and 10%. The second discount is the Aliyah discount, which is something that's changed 2 weeks ago. And it's something that should, nowadays at this stage, it's more complex.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're gonna come to that in a minute. So basically, when we're talking, looking at the person buying, the status of the purchaser, so we're looking at residency in Israel, and we're looking at whether they are Israeli or Alim?
Israeli resident. Because you can be a resident to get a lower tax rate, not necessarily be an Israeli citizen.
Mm-hmm.
This is a change from 2014. Before 2014, if you were an Israeli citizen living abroad, you can still get the lower tax rates. They changed it from a question of citizenship to a question of residency. And since January 1st, 2014, you can be an Israeli resident without being a citizen and still get the lower tax rate. Mm-hmm. When it comes to Aliyah rights, you have to become a citizen. You have to make Aliyah, and it's a combination of being a resident and a citizen. So as Aliyah, you can't just make Aliyah and move back to wherever you're from a week later, because you still have to become a resident as well as a citizen.
And they follow up? They check this?
They definitely do check. And you don't know, it could fall between the cracks and nobody would check, but I don't think it's a risk you want to take on that kind of amount of money, especially
Absolutely.
If you're planning to it.
Absolutely. So how do we define resident in Israel?
Okay, so just before I answer that, when you buy, even if from abroad, you can still get the lower tax rate if you become a resident within 2 years of signing the agreement. I go back to what I said before, that the defining date is the day that you sign the agreement. So you might initially have to pay the full tax, the 8 and 10%. But if you become an Israeli resident within 2 years of signing the agreement, I'll still be able to get you the difference back. So this is something very, very important to know.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
even if you don't make Aliyah, if you move to Israel, you live here as a resident, then you can get the Israeli resident benefit.
Yes. And if you did pay the full purchase tax to begin with, mm-hmm. and you may become an Israeli resident within 2 years, and I had a client who made Aliyah a year and 11 months in, mm-hmm. and I was still able to get him the money back. And when you get the money back, you'll get it with interest and index back from the government. So the same thing, if you defer the payment, you'll have to pay it.
Mm-hmm.
If you paid it and you have to get it back, the government will pay you back with interest and index.
Right, so that's a fair system.
Yes. And now what is a resident? So the rule of thumb, according to the law, is someone who resides in Israel 183 days a year in a calendar year, January mm-hmm. 1st to December 31st.
They look at the calendar year, not at the previous 365 days?
Right. They look at the time now when you ask for the discount, see, okay, are you in Israel 183 days a year? So if you moved at the middle of the year, then might look, you know, next year to see if you have spent the 183 days a year.
Okay.
Now, it's important. No, it doesn't have to be consecutive. So you don't have to be locked in Israel for 6 months. You can come and go as long as in a calendar year, you spend 183 days in the country. Now, this is a general rule of thumb, but it's not the only way. What's important for the tax office is to see that your center of living is here in Israel. So, you know, many times when I speak, you know, for Nefesh B'Nefesh, for people who are thinking about making Aliyah, I'm telling that an example that if you have a couple that works for, they move to Israel, but one of the spouses works for an international company and literally travels every week, Sunday to Thursday, comes back home for Friday and Shabbos. You know, so they're not going to be in Israel 183 days a year, but the spouse lives in Israel. The kids go to school in Israel. They're paying tax here. Your doctor is here. Your Bituach Lumi, the Social Security is paid here in Israel.
The bills are in your name.
The bills are in your name. So all these things are indication that your center of living is here in Israel. And it's my job, it's the lawyer's job to paint a picture to the tax office showing that your center of living is here in Israel. So even if you're not spending 183 days, I've been able to get for clients a lower tax rate based on showing that the center of living is here in Israel.
Excellent. Let's say a yeshiva student is here for a year or two. He's suddenly spending more than 183 days of the year here. But in a year or two, unfortunately, he plans to leave. Will they come back and say, sorry, but you're not a resident?
So the tax office knows that and knows people have tried it. And they are looking, especially when someone's young, you know, at that age, you know, when they're 18.
They're not really buying an apartment.
They don't have 6, 8, 10 million shekels to buy an apartment. And why are they here and who's getting the money? So they're not going to necessarily reject it from the get-go. But they say, okay, we're going to put it on freeze right now. Show me in 2 years that the person is still here in Israel.
Really?
And then I'll do it. So from my experience, buying it in a yeshiva or seminar, you know, boy or girl, they're coming to Israel, it's not effective. And most of the time, it's not going to help to reduce the tax.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good to know. So going back to the buyer's status, as the Americans say. So we're looking at their residency. We're looking at whether or not they've made Aliyah. And if they are foreign, if they do not live in Israel and they're not making Aliyah, then there are no discounts.
No discount.
No,
they would have to pay the full tax of the 8 and 10%.
Right. What happens if the buyers, a couple, are split? So one, for example, made Aliyah and the other didn't, for example.
Again, the question is residency. Maybe someone did not make Aliyah, did not get their Tudat Zot, but they're residing in Israel. So again, they're a resident.
Okay, but let's say one, we haven't spoken yet about the benefit for Olim, but right now the benefit for Olim is better than the benefit for an Israeli first-time buyer. So let's say we have a couple.
Not first-time, single residency.
Sorry,
single residency.
Okay, so in a case like that, would they get like 50-50? How does it work?
We would usually try to show the tax office that, you know, one of the spouses, and based on that, we would do it. Depends on really how deep they check. It's not very common, you know, practically speaking, it's not very common that there's a married couple that one spouse lives in Israel and the other spouse lives abroad. But if we can show that at least one of them resides in Israel, most of the times we'll be able to get a lower tax rate. But again, as I said, most of the times, I can't guarantee 100% of the times.
Okay, great. Fine. So let's talk about the other factors that are taken into account in the calculation. Besides the status of the buyer, what else are we looking at?
That is what the tax office is looking. There are, when it comes to capital gains tax, it could look at other costs. But when it comes to define the rates they're going to calculate, they basically check on your residency.
Your residency. Okay, so now let's talk about the sole property, as you said.
Yes. Sole property is meaning that you don't own any other property in Israel.
In Israel.
In Israel.
If you own in overseas, in Chutz Aretz, that's okay?
Yeah, that makes no difference.
Okay.
And you have, if you do own another property, but I said you want to upgrade, and the tax office, the government, the state are looking at people, you know, the family grows, they need to move to a larger apartment. They can't sell and move out of the place without having the new place they're going to move into.
So there'll be an overlap where they own two properties.
Yes. So when you buy the second property, you declare as part of the declaration to the tax office that you do own another property, and you commit to selling the initial property within 18 months of signing the new purchase agreement.
What if you're buying something that won't be ready for 3 years, 4 years?
So this was but secondhand. When you buy from a new construction, something's going to be ready, you have to sell the original apartment within 1 year of when the building got the letter of occupancy, the TOFAS Alba.
Excellent.
So they are giving you the opportunity to upgrade without having to pay. But until you actually sell the apartments and you want to pay just a lower tax rate to begin with, you're not going to get the certificate that you need in order to transfer title to the new place. So you might be under lien, which is 100% protected. You know, the buyer or the client would not have any risk, but the full title will not be eligible until you actually sell the original property, because only then the lower tax rates are in effect. If not, then if you have the extra money, then you could lay out the 8% to begin with. And once you sold it, you can appeal and get the difference back.
With interest.
With index and interest.
Right.
Are you thinking about buying property in Israel? Do you want to purchase before prices soar? Discover the benefits of buying off-plan. With just 20% down at signing, you can secure your home in Israel and take possession in 3, 4, or 5 years. Plus, you can buy with family and friends and customize your home to match your style and needs. Explore the latest projects across Israel at buyitinisrael.com. There's something for everyone. Don't wait. Visit buyitinisrael.com today and take the first step towards your foothold in Israel.
Right. Now, are there any requirements in terms of living in the apartment?
So when it comes to the lower tax rate based on Israeli residency, no. You can live in a rental place in Yerushalayim and buy an investment.
And rent your place out.
And rent your place out and live in a rent yourself in Tel Aviv and live there. There's no limitations.
Mm-hmm.
Now this is, I'm going to touch basically on something we'll probably touch a bit later, but this is one of the changes that happened in the new update or the new change to the Olim rights. Until now, if you bought under the previous law, Aliyah rights, you'd have to actually live in the apartment. Now, originally they didn't check it, but over the last few years, they actually started checking. They would come knock on your door in the evening, see who lives there. Mm-hmm. And if the person who bought the apartment does not live there, then you were not eligible. You would have to pay the difference back. It was only for an apartment you're going to be living in.
Mm-hmm.
With the new, which came into effect as of August 15th, you can buy using the Aliyah rights even for a place that you're not going to be living in.
Got it. As long as it's your only apartment.
Yes.
In Israel. Okay. Now, what happens if somebody co-owns a property already? So let's just say, for example, a bunch of siblings own property together. Each one has 20, 25% holding. And now it's time for one of them to buy their own apartment. Are they considered to already own something? Is this their sole property? They already?
No. So according to the law, owning up to a third of a property does not define you as an apartment owner. Mm-hmm. And then when you buy your other apartment, you will still have the lower tax rates, or you'll be able to use the lower tax rates as a single residency.
Mm-hmm.
So if I like to give this example, if you have three siblings, each one owns an apartment, or they own all three by a third of each apartment, the tax ramifications are completely different. So if you have three siblings, each one own a third in three apartments, they want to buy another apartment, they still be able to use the lower tax rates.
They will be able to. So it's above a third.
It's up to a third.
Up to a third.
And it doesn't matter if it's in one or more. It can be, as long as you don't own more than one third. So that's why I said before, if you have three siblings, each one owns an apartment, or three siblings each own a third in three apartments.
Makes a very big difference.
Makes a big difference on the tax ramifications.
What about children? Well, somebody buys an apartment in one of their children's names, and the child is under 18. So the child never bought something before. It's their sole residence. Does it come under their name or the parents' name?
So by tax law, they look at the family unit, and a family unit is considered to be parents and kids under 18.
Mm-hmm.
So if you buy in one of the spouse's names, only in one of the spouse's names, or in the name of a kid, but they're all under 18, it falls under the same category. So if your parents own it and you have a kid under 18, then it's not, you still have to pay the higher.
So someone's looking to make an investment property and they think they're going to put it in their child's name, or they'll do it in their spouse's name, and they did the other one, their first home in their their name, it doesn't work.
It doesn't work. The only exception to the rule is if you have spouses that have a prenuptial or postnuptial and they are acting in a separate financial way, then you're still able to use the initial, the lower tax rates for each one of
individually.
But it cannot be an apartment that they're going to be living in both, because then it takes away. They have to be like separate financially, separate entities in a way. So it's only if you really, really separate it, then you can use the lower tax rates for purchase of each one of the spouses.
Got it. Okay. So I should have mentioned earlier, very importantly, that we have on the Byte in Israel website, I believe the only English language tax calculator, and it's been updated. It was a little bit complicated this time to update because of the intricacies of the new amendment. But basically, if you look at it, you'll see that there are basically two sections, which you have to simply, just click on the options. And that is your status and the property, whether you are an Israeli resident, an Oleh Hadash, or a foreign resident, and whether this is your sole residence in Israel or your additional residence. And once you put in those two options, the rest is pretty straightforward. You press calculate and it will show you how much you owe. What's important to remember is that a foreign resident is considered to be the same category as an Israeli resident who already owns something, who's really considered to be, quote unquote, an investor. Even if you're not buying it as an investment, you'll be considered to be an investor until you are a resident in Israel.
Yeah, that's why I said originally that the tax for everybody, it starts from 8 and 10%. And the residency, whether Israeli or not, it doesn't make a difference as long as you're Israeli resident.
Excellent. Okay, before we move on to the intricacies for the Olim Chadashim, you mentioned earlier that sometimes, occasionally, you don't pay Mas Rechisha. Could you just give us a couple of examples without going into too much detail? When would somebody not pay Mas Rechisha purchase tax?
You're taking away all my secrets. So there's a very interesting clause in the laws that basically, if you are neither an Israeli resident nor a citizen, so you have to be both, meaning you have to be not an Israeli resident and not an Israeli citizen, because sometimes we have people that their parents were Israeli and that's why they got a Tudat Zehut. So mm-hmm. you have to make sure you don't have Tudat Zehut, you're not a citizen and you're not residing in Israel. Mm-hmm. If you're buying over the green line, places that not necessarily are crazy, places like Givat Zev mm-hmm. or the Gush Etzion area.
Efrat.
If you're buying in these places and you're neither Israeli resident nor a citizen, then the Israeli tax law might not apply to you. It's considered to be Jordanian law, and there is no purchase tax or capital gains tax under Jordanian law.
What if you're Israeli, though?
If you're Israeli, then you would have to pay according to the Israeli tax, and then the same rules apply. Mm-hmm. So, but if you're neither Israeli resident nor citizen, and you buy over the green line, that's one of the examples that there is no purchase tax for you to pay. But it's also important to know, and this is why I was saying originally, it's very important to do the tax planning, because the tax office, the same thing as, if you buy an apartment and become a resident within 2 years, if you bought over the green line and made Aliyah become a resident 6 months later, the tax authority has the right to revisit your file and then say, okay, you made Aliyah, become a resident very shortly thereafter, and then you would have to complete the tax. And that's why planning ahead of time, if you want to buy in one of these places, I would say try to buy as early as possible, 2-3 years beforehand, mm-hmm. so you know that you would not have to pay the purchase tax, move to Israel, and the tax office will not be able to revisit the file. Mm-hmm. And that's why tax planning is very important. And like you said, really speak to your lawyer about the taxes right to the beginning.
The same way that you have 12 months to make Aliyah and get the Aliyah benefit, right, from the time of buying.
Yes.
Does it work the other way as well?
So the time is a bit longer. It's not 1 year. I would recommend 2, 3, or 4 years ahead of time if you can to buy over the green line, and then it's not going to apply and the tax office will not revisit it. Now, many times, the chance of the tax revisiting is low, but we don't want, to put anybody at risk.
So before we move on to the rights for Olim, the benefit for the Olim, let's just give a few examples to show our listeners what sort of money we're talking about. And as I said, we mentioned the previous season when we spoke about how much does it cost to buy a home in Israel and what are the extra costs. It's very, very important to factor this in and to make sure the money is available at the time that you need to make the payment. So I'm actually going to go straight onto the calculator that we have. Let's take an example. Let's take a 3 million shekel apartment, okay? If you are an Israeli and you're buying your sole residence in Israel, we would be looking at about 45, almost 46,000 shekels. correct?
Yeah. So if you're an Israeli resident buying your single residency for a purchase price of 3 million shekels, the purchase price would be 45,538.
Excellent. And if this was their second property, then that amount goes to 240,000 shekels, which is about five times more.
Yes.
If not more.
Yes.
And obviously that's the penalty for buying more than one home.
Yes. It's just the idea that they raised it was try to lower the number of apartments people are buying in order to try and lower the cost of real estate. It didn't seem to affect really so much, but that was the idea behind it. If you raise the taxes, then people might not buy as much, and then there's not going to be as much demand, and prices might not go up as much.
Has not solved the housing crisis.
And they tried it five or six times and never helped, but they still tried it again.
Okay, so that's a good example for a non-Oleh Chadash.
That's right.
Let's talk now about the legislation for Olim. Before we talk about the changes and the amendments in this law, let's talk about what was until now, which still is an option for people who made Aliyah before August 15th.
That's right. So for somebody who made Aliyah, the tax would start at 0.5%.
And for someone who made Aliyah before August 15th, 2024.
That's right. The tax rate would start at 0.5% up to about 2 million shekels and then 5% on the rest. So if, let's say, you bought a 7 million shekel apartment, then you know you'd start at 0.5% on the first 2 million and 5% on the next 5 million shekels. It's important to remember that the same thing as in a resident, you can become a resident within 2 years of signing the contract and you'll still be able to get the lower tax rates. For Aliyah rights, it's 1 year from signing the agreement. Or if you're buying in a new construction, it's up to 3 years or when they receive the level of occupancy, whichever one comes first, you would have to make Aliyah by that point. And that's so the period is extended. And the Aliyah rights can also be used up to 7 years post making Aliyah. Mm-hmm. So that right, you can save it for if you made Aliyah, you have 7 years from that point onward to buy an apartment using.
That makes sense because many people make Aliyah. They rent for a number of years. They don't know exactly where they want to be. They try out a few different neighborhoods. So that's fair. It gives them 7 years to take the benefit.
That's right. This is also for post the change of August 15th. It's also apply the 7 years. Mm-hmm. But it's important to remember that post August 15th, it has to be for an apartment you live in. And it doesn't matter if you own another apartment or not. So prior to August 15th, or the new change, you were able to buy a second apartment using your Aliyah rights as long as you live in that apartment. This still applies for people who have made Aliyah prior to August 15th.
So until now, somebody who lived, let's say, in the United States and they had an apartment, a vacation home in Israel, they made Aliyah in July of this year, they can now come along and buy a new place that they're going to live in as their home, correct?
Yes.
And they can get the Aliyah benefit, even though they already own something.
Yeah, if they made Aliyah prior, they're still able to use the Aliyah rights despite owning another apartment in Israel.
Excellent. Whereas somebody who makes Aliyah today, for example, they if they already own something in Israel, they will not get the Aliyah benefit?
No, they right? will not be eligible to get a lower tax rate as Olim Chadashim.
Okay.
Unless they sell the existing apartment and buy a new one.
Understood. Okay. So why do you think this change was made?
So apparently what has happened, you know, according to, you know, what came out from the government is that in 2023, only 66 people have used the Aliyah rights because the Aliyah rights was not as beneficial as a single residency. Mm-hmm. And only if you bought something over six and a half million shekels, the Aliyah rights was better than someone who would buy as an Israeli resident as their single residency. So people who ended up using this right, but only people that buy very expensive, luxurious apartments, very high-end, very expensive. And you can see in the whole of 2023, only 66 people have used that rights.
Or people that already own something.
Or people that already own. But altogether, it was 66 people.
Unbelievable. So basically, there was no benefit. You were better off buying it as an Israeli resident. And there's no incentive to make Aliyah.
Exactly.
Right? So now, this benefit should hopefully encourage people
and help them more. The previous Aliyah rights were not helping people. It was basically not usable. So most people who made Aliyah were buying lower amount purchases and they just didn't use it. It wasn't worth their while.
Right.
Now they change it in a way that it would really help people that make Aliyah to get lower tax rates.
One other thing I just remembered is the new benefit only applies to properties under 20 million shekels.
Yes.
Anyone who's lucky enough to have 20 million shekels to spend on a home is treated like an Israeli resident.
It's about 21 million shekels, closer to 21. But yes, if you're buying over that, you're not eligible to use the lower tax rate as an Olim Chadashim.
Understood. So going back to people who, I guess it's quite a large number of people who made Aliyah before August 15th, I guess for 7 years prior to that, people that haven't bought something within the 7 years have the right to choose either one of tracks. And if I'm not mistaken, the only people that will pick the old legislation are those who already own something because they get the benefit.
That's right.
The Olim benefit is lower than the new one.
If they don't own, then it's still better off using the new rights for any purchases that you have. It's more beneficial to use it because it's lower than Israeli resident, than a single residency discount.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, the only time somebody would opt for the old legislation, the old benefit, is if they already own something.
Or on the higher end, because then the taxes they might not be capped. Like the old rights are capped at 5%. Here, if you're buying something which is more expensive between 6 to 20, you might have to pay higher amounts. But that's something we need to check on an individual basis.
So let's open the calculator and take a look and see how people will benefit from this. Let's stick with our 3 million shekel purchase. So somebody who just made Aliyah, mazal tov, you will pay on 3 million shekels. Remember, it's your sole, it has to be your sole
residency. Single residency.
So they would pay, I don't want to say only 5,000 shekels, but a little bit above 5,000 shekels, as opposed to a couple of weeks ago, they would have paid more than 60,000 shekels. That's a huge savings of 55,000 shekels on a 3 million shekel apartment.
That's right.
So that's really where the savings are. That's really where the big difference is.
And also on if you buy on a higher end.
Okay, like we said, let's put an example. Let's say 10 million shekels.
I'll go 15.
15, okay. Let's put in a 15 million shekel apartment. The sole residence for an Aleh Chadash would be today 738,000 shekels plus.
Yes.
Whereas previously.
It would be 660,536. Based on Takana 12. So sometimes the old system might be beneficial on the higher end amounts.
Understood.
For people who made Aliyah prior to August 15.
Okay, let's take an example of an Aleh Chadash who is not ready yet to buy his home. He's got 7 years to do so. But in the meantime, he'd like to buy an investment property. If he buys an investment property today, he's not going to be living in it. Okay, so he will buy it as an investor, as an Israeli resident. But then when he comes to buy his home, it's no longer a single residence.
That's
so
right.
He's lost it. So is there any advice we could give to somebody like that?
Yeah, so it really depends. And we have to crunch the numbers. It's not something just off the top of the head. But, you know, for example, if he's thinking now buying a smaller apartment as an investment and then something later on buying more expensive, it might be beneficial for them to buy first as a resident, buying their single residency. Mm-hmm. Because Aliyah rights you can use only once.
But
and sell this apartment and buy the more expensive apartment under the Aliyah rights. Because if you buy now as an investment using Aliyah rights, you've used up the right and you can't reuse it. And then when you sell it, you'll only have the single residency apartment. So it really depends on the amounts. If you buy the investment apartment for more expensive and then lower amount afterwards, it's better to use the Aliyah rights first and single resident later. But, you know, practically speaking, most people that buy first as an investment before they're buying their home would probably spend less money because when they buy the place they want to live in, they would spend more money on that. So it's better to originally buy the single residency, sell it, and then buy the second one of the home where you want to live for the higher amount under the Aliyah rights.
Mm-hmm. So that brings me to an important question because most people that are buying for investments don't really want to sell it. They want to hold it. And many people ask me, what if I buy it in somebody else's name? A brother, a parent, a child. What is your take on that?
So the issues, there are two issues there. I mean, first of all, you can do it. It's not a problem. The problem that comes out of it are not taxation questions are more questions of inheritance or security of your investment. If you buy in your kid's name, people say, okay, I'm going to leave it in the will. This belongs to all my kids. Mm-hmm. You can't, because the apartment belongs to that kid. You can't live in your will that somebody else's apartment is going to be split between the siblings. You can do it as a general guideline that you want to do it, but there is no way to enforce it because it's not their apartment to leave.
You're also putting your child in a position where they now own a property, and when they come to buy, they're going to have to pay the higher tax rate. They're not going to get the benefit of a sole resident.
Right. For example, you have the Mechir LaMishtaken. I'm not sure if you spoke about it in past episodes.
Yeah, we spoke about it with Gedalia Bovek.
So if you have Mechir LaMishtaken, if you already bought an apartment in the past, you're not eligible to apply for the Mechir LaMishtaken.
That's the government subsidized housing for first-time buyers.
First-time buyers, young couples, there's a few criteria. But if you already own an apartment, or even if you bought and sold it, once you already bought it, you're not eligible to apply for the Mechir LaMishtaken. So, you know, these are the
So you might be saving money in the purchase, but in the end, the kids are going to end up having to spend much more money later on, and it's not.
Right. But, you know, I have a client who I told him that, and he said, you know, my kid can't afford it now, but not be able to afford it afterwards. So whether they're buying it now or later, I'll be paying it. So I'll pay now the higher tax. Later, the higher tax doesn't make a difference.
You're right. So I have a client right now who is in this position, who made Aliyah recently, wants to buy an investment property. And he said he will buy it in his father's name. And his father will put in his will that this property is left for him.
Yes, that's something that's doable. The only fear or the only risk in that is that the will that applies is the last will. So even if he signs his father on a will right now, next week his father can write a new will and not leave it in there. And, you know, in a way you can lose that. So that you lose, in a way, security. Yeah. Again, sometimes, you know, families and everything, it goes great. But at the end of the day, the lawyer's responsibility is to look at the worst case scenario. Mm-hmm. And to tell, you know, your client is that even if his father leaves it in a will right now, if in 6 months he changes the will and doesn't leave it to him, he could lose
his best ever, right? Okay, so these are all things, you know, it's a cost-benefit analysis and everybody has to weigh that up.
Our job in general as lawyers to give you all the options. That's how I see it. You know, my job is to give you every possible scenario, everything possible you can do, and then you choose what's right for you. If you know there's going to be fights between the families or the siblings are not as close to each other, then I would say it's a risk you should take into consideration. If everything works perfectly in your family and everybody is in harmony and there's no issue.
No such thing.
I've seen things like that, but then go right ahead, not an issue. It's my job as a lawyer to give you all the possibilities and for you to choose the right thing for you.
Love that. Thank you. So just going back to the benefit, the new benefit, you said a few times, very importantly, that this has to be the place of residence. The buyer has to live in this home.
That's according to the old law.
I'm sorry, according to the old one.
Yes.
Okay.
Before.
How is that defined? They have a place in Yerushalayim they live, and then they also have a beach home in Netanya that they go to a lot of the time as well. Which one is?
So again, as long as you know renting it out, people come and check and see that your bills are in your name.
Got it.
There are nonis in your name. As long as it's not rented out, it's not an investment apartment.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Okay. Okay, so I think we've pretty much covered the benefit for the Lim Chadashim. We also covered briefly refunds, like what happens if somebody makes a purchase, their status changes because they make Aliyah or because they sold. What is the refund process? Who takes care of it? How's it done?
So your lawyer would do it again. You know, it goes back to the first question that you asked. What is the lawyer's role when it comes to the taxation? It's not your accountant. It would actually be your lawyer. And then we'll appeal to the tax office. We usually do it including in the price that we charge our clients. We don't usually charge extra fees for that. And would apply to the tax authority to appeal and get back the difference. It sometimes could take you know, the tax office not necessarily is very happy to pay back. It shouldn't take that long, but I had cases it took 6 months for us to get the money back from the tax authority, but it always works. Meaning the tax office will, if you're eligible to get the money back, you will get it. Mm-hmm. And again, the longer it takes them to pay you back, the more interest and interest you'll pay on it.
Great.
So it's not just if you applied and they haven't replied for a long time, it's not put on hold, on a freeze that you're not going to be able to get the indexed interest. Mm. So the longer it takes for them, you get you know, guaranteed interest on your money by the Israeli government.
Right. We've spoken a few times on the show here about the index. Everything in this country that is owed is to inflation, basically. And even when you are owed money yourself, you too will earn back the index so that your purchasing power is retained.
Yeah.
Okay. So finally, what I want to just say very importantly is that every year on January 15th, the rates, or rather the thresholds, the brackets for the calculation of the purchase tax are revised, and they are based upon
on
the cost of living. And obviously, check out the website Biden Israel. You'll always see that the calculator is updated and takes the new thresholds into account.
It's funny to know, though, that it's there's a difference between purchase tax and capital gains tax. Capital gains tax, in a way, updated on January 1st, while the purchase tax rates are updated on January 15th.
Interesting. Why can't they do it all the same way?
I cannot give the why. In general, sometimes, you know, we tell you what the law is. We can't necessarily explain, tell you why it is, just what it is.
Crazy. Well, next week, please God, Bezrat Hashem, we will be talking about capital gains tax, which is at the other end of the transaction when you sell. But very importantly, the tax rates are updated every year on the 15th of January. And sometimes, as we experienced this year, throughout the year, changes are made as well. Also, during COVID, there were some changes made in order to incentivize people to buy. Okay, the final topic that I want to talk about today before we end is another tax which is applied, which has to be taken into account when you are purchasing property in Israel. In fact, when you are purchasing almost anything in Israel, you have to think about something called VAT, value added tax. I come from the UK, so I grew up with value added tax. For many Americans, they cannot wrap their head around this. So perhaps, Yair, can you tell us a little bit about this tax and who pays it, when it's paid, and on what products and services?
Okay, so we'll go from the easier to the harder, the lighter to the heavier. In general, the tax, and again, what you said, Americans, it's hard for them to wrap around their head, because in the US, the VAT, you can equivalate it to the state and the federal tax. So Americans do know it, but usually it's on commodities, not on services. In Israel, the VAT also applies on services. So when you pay an agent, when you pay a lawyer, when you pay a mortgage broker, when you pay an engineer and appraiser, anybody that you hire that is part of the process of purchasing in Israel, when you pay their fee does not include VAT. So whatever the egregious price is the price plus VAT. So that's a simple. Now, when it comes to buying the property itself, when you buy secondhand, you know, from an individual.
Interrupt you for a second. Sure. A lot of my clients can't understand why foreigners have to pay this tax. When they go to a hotel or when they rent a car here, they are exempt from VAT because they are foreigners. Why do they have to pay this tax when they are purchasing an apartment to a lawyer or an agent or any other service provider?
So the question should be actually the opposite, is like, why don't they pay the VAT on hotel and car rentals?
Okay.
It's because they made a special law to exclude VAT on hotel and rentals. Or, for example, if you're buying a commodity that you're taking out of the country, mm-hmm. then you'll be able to get the VAT back, you know, in the airport.
They're encouraging tourism?
It's encouraged tourism. It's to help you consume things in Israel. Mm-hmm. And the government encourages it by telling people come and
money
spend
here.
Money,
Stimulate
spend time
the
here.
Economy.
Exactly.
Got it. Okay.
But when it comes to services that are staying in Israel, you're not taking back, then the VAT has to be paid. There's mm-hmm. no exemptions for foreigners.
Okay. So we spoke about the services on the real estate related transaction. Let's talk about the real estate itself.
Okay. So on the real estate itself, when you're buying a secondhand apartment mm-hmm. and you're buying from an individual, there is no VAT.
From a private seller?
From a private seller to okay. a private buyer, there is no VAT.
The price is
involved.
3 million shekels. That's the price. The full amount goes to the seller.
To the seller, right.
Got it. Okay.
If you buy or sell from a company, then, you know, they're obligated to pay the VAT, the company, whichever party it is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where does it really affect our clients, you know, the people that we work with?
Mm-hmm.
It's when they buy from a new construction mm-hmm. and then included in the price. When you register nowadays to buy in a new construction, you sign the registration form, you'll see that the price itself, you decided, you know, to buy for 3 million shekels, a new apartment from a construction, 17% are of the VAT are included in the price.
So if you're buying a new apartment for 3 million shekels, I just did the calculation, the actual price is 2,564,000, just a little bit above 2.5 million shekels, and 500,000 is actually tax. So the developer is going to take that money and...
The VAT. Let's not confuse them with purchase tax.
Sorry, it's actually VAT.
So the VAT, the builder that you're buying from, will pay the government. Mm-hmm. And now, it's a small anecdote, but when you buy a new construction, most of the time, the guarantee, and I'm sure you touched on it in the past, the bank guarantee that you get is on the amount, not including the VAT, because mm-hmm. the VAT, in a way, is guaranteed by the government. So if you cancel or something goes back, you can ask for the VAT back from the government. So when you get a bank guarantee for a purchase from a new construction, the guarantee will exclude the VAT.
Interesting. Okay.
So what has happened now? The government passed a law that as of January 1st, 2025, the VAT goes up to 18%. Currently, it's at 17% and it's going up to 18%.
We have to pay for this war.
They have to pay for the war, the extra expenses and everything that is
the
happening.
The economy that's suffering.
Yes, exactly.
So somebody who is buying new construction has to understand that on the portion that they still owe the developer, another 1% will be added. If you buy an apartment for 3 million shekels today, as I just told you, it's about 2.5 million shekels before the VAT. From January 1st, you will pay 3,025,000 shekels. Including
not exactly.
18%.
So not exactly. If you buy it after January 1st, the price will include the 18%, whatever price you agreed upon.
They'll put it up.
Put it up or not. Uh-huh. We don't know. The same thing is when they limited the amount that lawyers are allowed to charge for someone who's buying, the price did not necessarily went up. At the beginning they did, but not necessarily afterwards.
So if the builder puts the price up, if he puts up the price by 1%, or if he includes the additional 1% VAT, then the price will go up by 25,000 shekels. Wouldn't be surprised if there'll be incentives and offers to pay VAT at 17%, and the builder or developer will swallow the difference.
Yeah, I mean, we see now things we've never seen in the past. So many construction are paying 2080 or 1090. It's things that were not heard of.
Unheard of.
And then now, because of the war, it happened because builders wanted more people to buy, to encourage people to buy. And so they did it. And that's why they did also the side mortgage, you know, that the builder would pay for. These are things that you'll touch probably in another episode.
So I suppose for people who are buying now or people who have bought before January 1st, it's probably the most prevalent because they will have to pay an additional 1% on the purchase price that was the outstanding part of the purchase price that was agreed upon.
So anybody who bought already now or is buying prior to January 1st, the price in the contract will include 17% VAT. Mm-hmm. Anything they pay up to January 1st will be under the 17%. And anything after that, they will have to add on that portion the additional 1% to VAT. That's why we're actually seeing quite a bit of my clients that are trying to pay up things earlier in a way to save that 1%.
Really?
So they're trying to, you know, push up some of the payments earlier to save on that extra tax that they don't need to. You know, again, I think it all goes down to finances, you know, how much you make on your money. If it's worth it for you to defer and, you know, your money will get more than 1%, then people would do it. If they're not going to get this extra 1%, they would rather pay up early and push up payments.
But again, as I always say, the most important thing is being aware, understanding that even when you sign a contract, there are variables such as the VAT, which is not fixed. The actual purchase price is fixed, but the VAT is also subject to change. I had clients, I remember, I think it was about 8 years ago, where actually the VAT went down after they purchased, and they were shocked that they actually had to pay less than they thought they had to. So again, it can work in both ways.
We don't know this extra 1% how long it's going to last for, meaning that it might be for 6 months or a year, because VAT, I remember still, the VAT was at 18%, 17%, and 16%. Right. You know, so the government does change it. So I think there's a good chance that once the war is over and the economic, God willing, soon, and the economics in Israel is going to be stable and we're going to be able to recoup some of the extra money that we lost on the war, I believe there's a good chance that the tax office or the government will reduce the amount back. So the VAT. So it could be if you're signing now at 17%, make some payments at the beginning of 2025 at 18%. And then, you know, if you still have more payments later on, there could be that the later on the payments would go back to 17%.
Interesting.
It has happened in the past.
Something that's bothering me a great deal is that we just did calculations for mas rechisha, for the purchase tax, on new properties that include the VAT, so they're paying tax on the tax.
Yes.
Which is not very fair.
It's not very fair, but even more so, and this is something not everybody knows, that you're supposed to pay the purchase tax also, especially when you buy a new construction, the buyer would pay some amount to the company's lawyer, you know, mm-hmm. up to a purchase of about 4.8 million shekels, it's capped at about 6,000 shekels.
Right.
But anything above that, there is no cap. And, you know, there are some builders that would charge 1 to 1.5% on the buyer to pay for their lawyers. That amount has to be added to the purchase price and you pay purchase tax on it.
It's tax on tax.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
And it's, again, you know, don't shoot the messenger. I need just to tell you what it is.
Right. We're not in control of these things. It's our job to
inform people.
Inform people.
So they know and aware of it and it's not come to them as a shock.
No surprises. Yair, we could carry on talking about this for hours, but I think we've covered pretty much everything.
Taxes and saving on taxes is one of my favorite topics to plan and how to do it and what to do to try and save.
You certainly do have a lot of tricks up your sleeve, and I'm sure that's how you please your customers. So thank you for doing that. And before we end, I have to ask you two important questions. Where in Israel do you live and what do you love most about living there?
So I live in Jerusalem.
Wow, lucky you. Whereabouts? Which area?
In Katamon area. Now, I can never leave Jerusalem. I'm a seventh generation Yerushalmi, so I'm not allowed to
Absolutely.
Leave the area.
And your kids too.
And my kids are now eighth generation Yerushalmi.
They're going to need a lot of money.
Yes. Listen, Jerusalem is really one of the most beautiful cities around the world. You know, I just came back from, abroad. And the weather in Yerushalayim, you know, you can't compare it. You know, that night you always have, you know, cool down. It's mm-hmm. beautiful streets. It's a unique city that is not planned. So, you know, every street has its own
character
and where it goes and how it leads. You know, in the army, I had a guy who traveled all over the country and he had no issues. Says only Yerushalayim, because, you know, you mm-hmm. never have the street, you know, changes and curves and it's never straight. And then in the middle of the street, it could change name to another name.
True.
And
wow.
Take Chernyakhovsky Street, for example. It breaks out twice instead of continuing straight. I can't, you know, explain why, but it makes it much more interesting. So nowhere like Yerushalayim.
Unbelievable. Where's your office, by the way?
In Yerushalayim, in Nayot, not far from the Botanical Gardens.
Very nice. Beautiful. We were just there for a wedding last week. And finally, Yair, if you were to move to a different part of the country, where would you go and why?
So my wife is from Australia and Australians love the beach. So it would have to be somewhere
close. You said that with an Australian accent.
Yeah, she has a tremendous effect on me. And it would have to be somewhere close to the beach. Herzliya, Netanya, there's some beautiful places in Ashkelon. Hadera has some beautiful projects coming up right now.
Yep.
I'm representing a client right now buying in a new construction in Hadera. These are great cities and great places.
Lots of great options to be on the beach, the beautiful beach of Israel.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Bezrat Hashem, we will help many people fulfill their dreams.
Amen.
Yair, thank you so much. And we should see peace and security in our beloved country.
Amen. Thank you so much for having me on here.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to On the House. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe and share it with your family and friends. You can also visit buyitinisrael.com, where you can find news, market updates, guidance, and much more on real estate in Israel. That's buyitinisrael.com. If you have a question or a specific topic you'd like us to cover on this podcast, please email us at the address you'll find at the bottom of the show notes. Whether you're thinking about Aliyah, looking for a home or a haven, or wanting to support the Israeli economy, now is the time to buy it in Israel.